Chapter 11. The next day, Krokolnia's cohort marched in. Pont, his junior captain, escorted the survivors back to the company's camp, while the Duke, Krokolnia, and most of that cohort went on to Valdaire.
"I thought the Zardians were defeated," said Kalexon. "What happened?"
Ariel, the junior sergeant in Krokolnia's cohort, chuckled.
"They were, but they'd hired a mercenary band to help them, only it was too late. Then the Duke pulled us out, so when their hirelings finally arrived, they quit talking to Foss Council again and decided to fight for it."
She paused to wipe the sweat from her face.
"Won't do them any good, as long as Foss Council still has 3 cohorts in the field, and we have 2. "Who'd they hire?"
Varn's face still looked patchy and pink, but she was otherwise healthy.
"Some southern company. We don't have to worry. They won't be any better than the Zardian militia."
"Unless they've got the free pikes," said Vanza.
Ariel looked startled.
"I never thought of that. They hardly ever hire out."
"Who are the free pikes?" asked Pox.
"The only decent southern company," said Ariel. "They're from the high mountains in the southwest. I think they call it Horn Guard."
"That's right," said Vanza. "They don't hire out much. They fight in defense, or if their land needs money. But when they fight..."
He shook his head. "But the Zardians did not have the free pikes. They had hired," Stammel explained, "a renegade baron of the Sire of Westland and his so-called knights. They were best known for their woods work, sneaking into enemy lines at night to kill sleeping men or steal supplies or start fires, but could put up a respectable fight on the field as well." Pox had hardly realized, in the excitement of her first battle, that the Duke's company was not fighting alone. Now she had a look at the Foss Council militia. They wore short gray tunics over trousers of bright red, from Foss, or green, from Ifoss. They carried short, straight swords and light throwing javelins. Foss Council held the right wing of their position. Their camp, like the Duke's, was in the forest. Trees ended on a gentle slope, opening on a wide expanse of grass and sedge that faced another tree-shaded ridge some distance away. To the left, the trees made an arc connecting the two ridges. To the right, the grassy meadow grew wetter, finally producing a stream that trickled away to the north. When the next battle came, 2 days later, Pox was more than ready for it. Someone had made it through the lines. Armie was in the surgeon's care with a knife wound, and Kerr of Doran's cohort was dead. Even so, her breath came short as the two lines closed. For an instant, she was even more frightened than the first time. She could feel the sickening blow that had opened her leg. She thrust the thought away angrily as the remembered noise and confusion swept over her. This time, she was able to keep her head, battering at the enemy stroke after stroke. She was aware of the man beside her, able to adjust her strokes to his so that they fought as a unit. It seemed to last forever. Dust, noise, confusion, the rising and falling blades. Then the ground softened under her feet. She realized that they had advanced to the center of the field, where mud churned up instead of water. Sometime after midday, both sides withdrew a space. Pox drained her water flask and wiped sweat from her face. She had come through uninjured. Her stomach growled. A long time since breakfast. They stood quiet in formation. Across the way, the enemy lines shifted, milling.
"Pass your flask back," said Donag, handing her his. "They'll send water forward."
Soon the dripping flasks returned, and they drank. Slabs of bread came forward, then more water. Pox ate hungrily. When she looked again, the enemy seemed a little further away. She nudged Kiri beside her.
"They're giving back," he said. "Don't look at 'em. And maybe they'll go all the way."
"But what does it mean?"
"Means they don't want to fight the rest of the day. Fine with me. It's too blazing hot anyway."
And in fact, the enemy were soon back in their own camp, and to Pox's surprise, they were not sent in pursuit. In the next week, before the Duke returned, they fought several such inconclusive engagements.
"Why don't they want to fight and win?"
she asked one night.
"Don't complain," said Donag. "If they wanted to win, I suppose you mean Foss Council? It'd be our blood on the ground and not their militias. Think about it. They want to win. But what they want to win is whatever it is they're fighting about, where a border is, or a caravan tariff, or something like that. If they can convince Zardus to yield on that, without us having to cut our way through the entire Zardian army, so much the better.
But, began Arnie, now back from the surgeons.
No buts, interrupted Donag. Terz guts, you idiots. You'll get all the fighting you've stomach for by the time you make corporal, if you live that long. Don't look for trouble. It's your profession. It'll come to you.
When the Duke returned, everything changed again. With Krakonia's archers, he decided to change ground. Under cover of darkness, they slipped far to the left of their previous position. This left a gap between the Duke's company and Foss Council's troops, and confused the novices almost as much as the enemy. Pox worried about the militia, and even more about what they might think.
Don't be silly, said Kana. She had seen this before. They're moving too. It's a trap, if it works, and a good move, even if it doesn't.
They made it to the Duke's chosen field without interference, and Stammel explained how it was better for their purposes than the other one.
He wants to use our archers. So far the Zardians haven't shown us any, so we don't have to worry. But look, the mixed cohort will be up there.
He pointed.
They can't get to him on foot or horse, but they'll be in range to feel it when Krakonia opens up. Just watch it come.
As Stammel predicted, the Zardian forces gave way once the Duke's archers opened on them. Pox, watching the enemy ranks melt away, was glad the Zardians could not counterattack in kind. The Duke ordered a pursuit, and they began several weeks of constant movement and fighting. Although they never fought the Zardians to a finish, each time they met, it was on ground of the Duke's choosing, and each time the Zardians slipped away, losing ground, back toward their city. When its walls came in sight, the Duke sent two cohorts around to the south to stop traffic on the southern caravan route, while the other cohort and the Foss Council militia harried the Zardians. A few days after that, the campaign was over. Incoming caravans paid their tolls directly to the Foss Council commander, and he had a treaty to take back to their table of counselors.
You had a good campaign for your first one, Stammel told the new privates in his cohort. Some set battles, good moving engagements, enough fighting, but nothing really hard. And we'll be doing garrison work or caravan work the rest of the season, so you'll have a chance to learn that.
What? Arnie sounded as surprised as Pox felt.
Yes. Any year a campaign doesn't last the season, which is most years, we're hired as caravan guards or garrison troops for the rest of it. Foss Council wants us to garrison the border forts between them and Zardus, for instance.
But when do we get to go to a city?
He means, when do we get paid?
Vic interrupted Malik. Stammel laughed.
Ah, thinking like real mercenaries. I expect when Foss Council pays the Duke, which shouldn't be long, it'll trickle down to you, and if we're close enough to a city or town, you might have a little time to waste your pay.
The Duke's scribe sat behind a table as the captains and sergeants set out stacks of coins. The company lined up in order of seniority, which meant that the new privates in the back caught only glimpses of the glinting piles before veterans blocked their view. Pox wondered if any of them had dared ask how much they would be paid. She had no idea what to expect. For that matter, she wasn't sure how many coppers made a silver, or what a silver would buy. She had agreed, with the others, to pay into the company's death fund. Stammel explained that this paid for having the personal effects and any salary owed sent to the heirs of those killed. But she did not know what that would leave. The line snaked forward, slowly. When Pox could see the table again, the piles were much smaller. Suddenly she thought of her expensive healing. Did that come out of her pay? The scribe called her name at last, and she stepped forward. Captain Arkelin picked up the roll and glanced at it, then looked at Pox. You were promoted on the first day of the campaign. You've got a small bonus for your actions when the sick train was attacked, less the contribution to the fund. Did Stammel explain the currency? Pox nodded. He'd explained, but she didn't really understand. The Guild League cities coined under their own marks at agreed weights, with the gold Nata, or father, being the coin of greatest value, followed by the gold Nas, or son, silver Nitti, mother, silver Nis, daughter, and two sizes of coppers, the page and serf.
Well then, said Arkelin, it will be 36 nitties for you.
He pushed a pile forward.
I'd advise you not to draw at all, said Stammel. As long as we're in town, you can draw your pay once a day. You're less likely to lose it to thieves and such.
Pox had never seen so much money. It was hard not to take it all. How much, then, sir?
Take 10, why don't you? That should be enough to make you feel rich. Take 2 of it in mixed coppers.
Pox nodded to the scribe, and he marked the sum she drew beside her name. Stammel counted the coins into her hand. They were heavy when she dropped them in her belt pouch. It dragged at her belt. She thought of all she could buy, and how soon she could save up the amount of her dowry to repay her father.
I've never had so much money, said Sobbin, coming up beside her.
Nor I, said Pox. And to think we'll get more next month, and the next.
What are you going to buy?
Pox thought through her list. She didn't know what they had yet. I was wondering if there was a place to buy spice bread.
Sobbin laughed. You and I are truly country-born. I was thinking about clotted cream. That's what they had at fairs near home. I never had but a bit of it, and I could eat it by the bucket. And something for my sisters, ribbons or something like that. Stammel said it could go north with a duke's next courier, if it was small and light.
Pox had not thought about presents. She felt guilty. I'm saving to send my dowry to my father, she said.
Dowry?
Sobbin looked surprised. I thought you didn't want to repay it, she corrected. He had already given it when I ran away.
She had never told anyone but Stammel the circumstances of her leaving home.
Oh, I see.
But you hadn't agreed, had you?
No, I told him I wouldn't wed Fersen, but he thought he could make me, so he gave dower.
But if you didn't agree, it's not your fault.
Bara pushed in beside her. Pox wished she'd never mentioned it. No, I suppose not, but I'd feel better if I paid it back. There's my brothers and sisters to think of.
Bara snorted, and Sobbin asked quickly, Do you know how much it is?
Not exactly. In fact, she didn't know anything but rumor. Her eldest brother had said it was as much as Amboy dowered his eldest to the wool merchant's son in Rocky Ford, and she thought she remembered what the baker's wife in Three Furs had said about that.
Sobbin looked impressed, and asked no more questions.
When they asked Stammel for permission to leave camp and go into the city, he told them to wait. Shortly before midday, he gathered some of his novices.
All right, he said. You've got your pay. Come along and let me show you how not to spend it.
Vic shook his pouch, listening to the jingle of the coins.
But, sir, I already know how not to spend it, and I have plans. Sure you do. And I can't stop you from losing your last copper, if you're taken that way. But I can show you the safer places to drink, and maybe keep you from being robbed and beaten in some alley.
Is Foss so dangerous? Asked Sobbin. And who'd attack us? We're armed, said Pox.
It's exactly that attitude, said Stammel severely, that loses good fighters every year. With the company, you're good, but alone, in an alley with thieves, no. If you're lucky, you wake up in the morning with a lump on your head and no money. Unlucky, you find yourself in a slaver's wagon with a sack over your head and a brand, or maybe just dead. You youngsters don't know the first thing about cities. Well, maybe Vic and Geordi do, and that's why you'll come with me this time.
A half hour later, Stammel led a dozen of them into the wide public room of the Dancing Cockerel. A tall, powerful-looking man in a green apron came forward to greet them.
Hey, Mathis, old friend. I thought we'd see you this summer, bringing the new ones in, eh?
The man looked at them keenly.
Duke Phelan's soldiers are welcome here. What will you have?
Bring us your good ale, Balner, and plenty of it. We're in time for lunch, I trust.
Certainly. Be seated here, unless you wish a private room?
Stammel laughed. Not for lunch. Are you thinking the Duke's raised our pay?
I'd trust you for it, after these years. Besides, what I heard about the Duke's contract, you're getting paid in gold for copper.
So, you can hear anything if you listen to all. Besides, what have contracts to do with us, poor soldiers that we are, and dying of thirst in the middle of your floor?
A roar of laughter from a table near the wall greeted this, and the tall landlord turned away.
Have a seat here, said Stammel more quietly, and Pox and the others sat down to a long table near the center of the room.
How much is the ale? Asked Sobbin, fingering his belt pouch.
Last time I was here it was 3 pages a mug, and a nitty a jug. Local coinage. Dearer than some, cheaper than others. But Bolner doesn't water his ale, and he won't take a bribe to drug it, as some taverners will. This is a good tavern, as taverns go. Just remember that any landlord loves gossip, and can no more keep a secret than a pig can weave. Anyone who talks about the company's business will be explaining it to the captain.
Hey, Sergeant Stammel!
They turned to see a fat redhead at the table by the wall.
Still taking your recruits about in leading strings?
His companions laughed again. Pox looked quickly at Stammel. He was smiling, but his eyes were grim.
My dear Lachlan, if they were recruits, I might. But these are all seasoned fighters, merely friends. And how is the Baroness these days?
The fat man jogged one of his companions with an elbow.
Seasoned? Half-seasoned, I should think. Close as they cling to you like chicks to a hen. Ha! They're big enough. Especially that yellow-headed wench, but—
Pox flushed and took a quick breath. Stammel's hand beneath the table dug into her elbow.
Now, Lachlan, we realize it's been so long since you fought, you can't tell the fighters from the spectators, but come to our next, and let us show you. And mind you keep civil. This wench, as you would say.
Stammel released Pox's elbow and thumped her shoulder lightly with his fist.
Could part you from crown to cod with one stroke. I trained her.
Pox gazed across the room at the fat man's pink face, now a shade paler than it had been. He looked from Stammel to her, and made a face, lifting his brows.
Well, pardon me for plain speaking to an old comrade.
Stammel snorted.
What a fierce look she has, too. I had no wish, wolf maiden, to anger you and risk a blow from that strong arm your sergeant boasts of.
He rose from his table and made an elaborate bow.
There. Will that content you, or must I attempt some other satisfaction?
Pox looked down at the table, scarred by many diners. She would gladly have leaped on the man and killed him then and there. Sabin, sitting on her other side, nudged her with his knee.
We would be content, said Stammel mildly, to take our ale in peace.
And silence.
You can't order me off, cried the fat man.
Pox suddenly realized that he was both drunk and frightened.
You don't have any right to order me around now, Sergeant. I've got soldiers of my own.
"'Psst, Lachlan,' said one of his companions. "'Let it be, man. Don't start.'
Pox jumped as a tall pitcher and several mugs were dumped in front of her. Two serving wenches, as well as Bolner, were at the table, distributing the ale. Stammel turned away from the fat man to grin at Bolner.
"'What's the menu today, eh?'
"'The usual. Common lunch is slices off the joint, bread, red roots, cheese. We've got the kind you like from Sterry. No extra charge to this party.' Or special, roast fowl, and we've 3 in the oven, pastries, Sellers tarts, plum, peach, and strawberry, but not enough of the last for everyone. Fish, but I don't recommend it, it's river trash this time of year. Leg of mutton, it won't be done for several hours. Soup, there's always soup, comes with the common lunch or the special, or a mug of soup with bread is 5 pages.
How much for the common lunch?
For this group, if you all take it, well, I'll take off a bit. Say a nitty each, ale included.
Stammel looked around at them.
It's good food here. What about it?
They nodded, and Stammel gave a thumbs-up sign to the host, who left the table, calling orders to the kitchen. Pox looked for the fat man, but he had gone, and his friends with him.
Who was that?
She asked Stammel.
Who? Oh, him, the fat one?
She nodded.
His name's Lachlan. Used to be one of ours years back. He left the company. Now he's in some local baron's guard, and bed, they say, when the baron's traveling.
I'd like to—
began Pox. But Stammel interrupted.
No, you wouldn't.
She looked at him surprised.
Don't get into fights. Remember that. The rule is the same as inside the company. There's no good reason short of being assaulted. You get us a reputation for brawling, and we'll all lose by it.
But what he said about Pox—
Sabin scowled.
Why should we let him get away with that? Because we want to come here and eat, or shop in the market, and not be prey to every cut-person ruffian, and have the citizens cheering them on when you, and you, and you—he
pointed around the table—are
bleeding in the street,
or being hauled off to the lockup by militia. We don't want trouble. We aren't paid to fight over nothing. Tur's bones. We know any one of us could split that fat leech. What difference does it make what he says?
Pox reached for the pitcher and poured several mugs full. She pushed one towards Stammel and took one herself. She sniffed at it. It smelled much like the ale sold at market in Three Furs.
Pox, have you had ale before?
She blushed. No, sir, not really, just a few swallows. She took a cautious sip.
Don't drink much, then. It makes some people quick-tempered. You don't need that. Vic, I don't have to ask you.
Vic had drained his mug at one swallow.
No, sir, and how I've missed good ale these long months.
Stammel grinned.
You can spend your pay quickly on ale, if that's your choice. Just keep in mind... Oh, aye, no fighting, no talking. But what about wenching and dicing?
Well, if you must, you must. I'd recommend Silver Thorn Inn for the one, and here for the other.
Whatever you do, stay away from River Lane, across the market, and don't go to Aula's. They'll recommend it at Silverthorn, but don't. All the dice are magicked, and the dwarf will slit your gizzard in a second if you show you notice.
Yes, sir. Perhaps I'll wait for another day.
Arnie laughed. Adding up the cost, Vic? Homebrew's the cheapest, they say.
It's not so much my silver I care for as my fair white skin. You know how I dread being ill-marked.
The rest laughed. Between sunburn, freckles, and healing battle scars, not much fair white skin was displayed.
That's all right, Vic, called Coben from down the table. You can teach me that dicing game. What is it?
Don't play the innocent cob, said the redhead. I heard about you with that girl from Doran's cohort. Was it 5 silvers or 6 you won from her while she taught you dicing?
More than that, my lad, more than that, said Coben and drained his mug. I'm a slow learner, I am, especially when I'm winning.
Here you are, said Balner from behind them.
He and each of the serving girls carried a platter of sliced roast meat to set out on the table. By the time they had finished stuffing themselves with meat, rounds of dark yellow cheese, red roots, bread and soup, the rest of the room was empty.
Now, said Stammel, a last reminder. Don't wander about alone. Stay in pairs, at least. Keep alert. Foss has as many thieves and cutpurses as any city. The slavers won't bother you if you stay together. Don't brawl. Keep your mouths shut about the company and its business, but be polite otherwise. If one of you gets drunk, the other brings him home. You're all to be back before supper, so the others can go. Clear?
They all nodded. In the main market square, they scattered into clumps of 3 or 4. Arnie and Coben stayed with Pox and Sabin, poking into every stall and shop along one side of the square. One sold lace, its white tracery displayed against dark velvet. Another sold strips of silk, patterned with exquisite embroidery. Pox found a spice bread stall, and managed to stuff down a square of it, despite the lunch she'd eaten. They found a shoemaker's shop, displaying pointed-toed shoes in scarlet and green and yellow, and a bootmaker's with riding boots, laced boots, and one pair made of 3 different leathers. Pox stared, and the man came to the door.
You like those, fair warrior? 'Tis mullock's hide and goatskin, and the skin of a great snake from across the sea, south of Ayr. Only a Nos for you.
No, thank you, said Pox, stunned more by the price than the boots.
He smiled and turned away. Coben stopped to look at a jeweler's display. The jeweler's guards dropped their hands to the hilts of their weapons. Pox looked over his shoulder, eyes wide. A tray of rings, gold, silver, some with bright stones set to them. Most were finger rings, but some were clearly earrings. Another tray held bracelets, and a single necklace of blue stones and pearls set in silver.
Look at that, breathed Coben, pointing to one of the rings. It's like a braided rope.
Pox saw another that looked like tiny leaves linked together. She wondered what else was in the shop, far too expensive, whatever it was. One shop displayed clothing. They could see the tailors inside, sitting cross-legged on their platform. Bolts of cloth were piled up behind them. Another shop was hung with musical instruments, 2 lap harps, a lute, something twice the size of a lute with more strings, and many more than that none of them recognized. In a litter of wood shavings, the maker was working on a part, and smiled at them as they peeked in the door.
He reached a hand to pluck one of the harps and show its tone. Pox was entranced. She had heard a harp only twice, when musicians came to the fair.
Can you play, as well as make them?
His bushy eyebrows rose.
Of course, girl. How else would I know if I'd made them well? Listen.
He unfolded himself from the workbench, lifted the harp, and ran his hands along the strings. Pox had never heard that music before, but shivers ran up her spine.
Do you know Tori's ride?
Asked Arnie, nudging Pox forward.
Certainly, three versions. Where are you from?
From the north, from Tsaya.
He paused to adjust a tuning peg. Then the thrilling sound rang out, one of the few songs Pox had learned before leaving home. She found herself humming along. Arnie was murmuring the words, as was Coben. The instrument maker finished a verse with a flourish.
There you are. But are any of you players?
Pox could have listened all afternoon. She shook her head, and Arnie said, "No, sir." And he went back to his bench, shaping a little piece of wood with a small chisel. Pox wondered which instrument it was for, and where it would fit, but was too shy to ask. They left that shop and moved on. She found the surprise for Sabin several shops down. Here were trays of religious symbols, carved of the appropriate stone or metal. Most, she did not know. The crescent and cudgel of Gerd were familiar, and the Holy Circle, and the wheat sheaf of the Lady of Peace. The Sword of Tur was there, both plain and cleverly set with a tiny jewel in the pommel. But whose was the leaping fish, or the tree, or the arch of tiny stars? She looked at tiny golden apples, at green leaves, at anvils, hammers, spears, fox or wolf heads, little human figures clothed in flowers. Swirling hair made the loop for hanging. Here was the antlered figure of Guthlac, and the double-faced head of Simyets, a harp for Garin, the patron of harpers, and shears for Dort, the patron of sheep-shearers and all in the wool trade. Then she saw the little red stone horse, and remembered Sabin's words that day in the stronghold. She looked up, and found the shopkeeper watching her. She glanced around. Sabin was in the next shop, pricing combs for his sisters.
How much? She asked.
And will it break easily? He shook his head.
Not these symbols, lady. And they have all been blessed by the cleric for each one. They'll bring luck and blessings to those who wear them.
Pox doubted this, but didn't argue. How much? She asked again.
The little horse, the symbol of Senith, the horse lord, and Arvoni, the patron of horsemen?
Pox nodded. 5 nitties. She was startled, and her face must have shown it. He said smoothly,
But for you, lady, you will need luck. For you, I will say 4 nitties and 2 serfs.
Pox had never bargained herself, though she had heard her mother and father.
I cannot spare so much, she said, and looked away, shifting her feet.
She sighed. She wanted that horse for Sabin, but 4 nitties, that was 4 meals like lunch. And she wanted other things, too.
3 nitties, 2 nis, he said. I can't do more than that.
Abruptly, Pox decided to buy it. She fumbled in her pouch for the silver. When she came out, with the horse safely stowed in her pouch, Sabin was still looking at combs. Arnie and Coben were rummaging through a pile of copper pots on the pavement. She ducked into the shop with Sabin.
I can't decide, he said, turning to her. Suli likes flowers, so that's easy, this one.
The comb had a wreath of flowers along the spine. But for Rahel and Maya, do you think the birds or the fish or the fern?
Pox thought the fern was the prettiest, and liked the leaping fish better than an angry-looking bird.
He paid for the combs, and they walked out. They saw fruit stalls beyond the piles of pots. Early berries, early peaches. They squandered coppers on the fruit, and walked on with sticky fingers. Coben cocked an eye at the sky.
We'd better be going, he reminded them.
They turned back across the square. Pox went to the spice bread stall again, and bought a stack it took both hands to carry. They munched spice bread most of the way back to camp. As they were going to their posts for duty, Pox gave Sabin the little horse.
I remembered you lost your bit of hoof, she said. I couldn't find a hoof, but maybe the whole horse will do.
He flushed.
It will do well, Pox.
Thank you.
Was it from the shop, next to the comb place?
Yes. I looked at it, but didn't buy it.
You shouldn't have spent so much.
Well, this time Pox blushed. I
Sobbin laughed. You too? I bargained myself, but I couldn't get him to go lower than 3 nitties.
3?
Pox gasped, and began to laugh helplessly.
What? What did you get it for?
She shook her head, laughing even harder. A veteran walking by stared at her. Finally she stopped, sides aching. Sobbin was still watching her, puzzled.
You should have...
she began, and started laughing again.
Oh, I can't. It hurts. You should have got it yourself. You're the better bargainer.
You mean, you paid more than that?
Not much, she said, still laughing. As a fighter, I may be good, but at market?
Well, the man tried to tell me it was bad luck to bargain over a holy symbol, so maybe it will be better luck this way.
Sobbin grinned.
Tell you what, Pox, the next time you want something, I'll bargain for you.
Thanks, she said.
And by the way, he went on, taking a comb from his pouch, this one's really for you. The ferny one.